Well, goody, 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 lucky, 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 everybody out there, because you got me again. Well, that may not be true, but it's the fact. I'm back again, and you're out there. I'm in here. RJ's running the board, and Robert's in the chair across from me. Good morning, afternoon, this is. This is afternoon already,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, we keep bumping into afternoons. I hear they're finally talking about keeping the time the same.
It would be wonderful.
I mean, I would literally vote for Genghis Khan as governor or president if they would just keep the time one place. I mean, I think it messes up us and the fish. I think
it's just everything is just completely wrong when they change it.
And our producer was sick, and so not only does he have to get used to the time change, he's got to get used to being well again.
Being well again. That's being a wonderful place to be.
Yes. We got top five coming up. This is snook season, and it's snook season happens to fall on tent sale season.
Yes. On everything season.
Yeah, everything goes on in March. Boy, the 24th, we got the tent sale coming up. Got almost 50 manufacturers. I think we've got the layout figured out, so how to get all those people from behind the store, out front of the store, and back behind the store, and it's going to be chaotic. But one of the things I want to talk about is snook, really. It's snook season right now. Wonderful eating, great fun to catch and release, all of the above. On the west coast of Florida, well, let's start with the east coast. On the east coast, they do about 300,000 catch and releases a year. Somewhere between 100 and 300,000. And about, now the state wants about 40% of the snook to go through the slot limit and get bigger than the slot limit. That's the ideal. And on the east coast of Florida, even though they get additional time and bigger fish and all that, they do about 300,000 snook caught and released, but they never get more than 35% of the fish to go through the slot limit. Quite often it's closer to 30%. Now, in the west coast of Florida, where we are, we're over here in the beautiful, you know, downtown Northport, Florida, on the west coast of Florida, we literally catch and release about 1 million snook a year from Tampa down to the Everglades versus, you know, on the other coast, south of Daytona down to the Keys, we do almost three times as many snook caught and release. And usually 46, 48% of them or more go through the slot limit. The highest I think we ever were was 52.
That's pretty impressive.
And, you know, you keep hearing about, well, we should do this and we should do that. Me personally, I don't like the slot limit where it is. I think the slot limit should be, you can't keep anything under 39 inches. Anything 39 and over, good to keep. I don't know why, but with fish, the older they are, the less likely we are to target them or keep them. The younger they are, you know, it's really not many creatures in the world we do that with.
Right.
Usually we want to take care of the babies and the young and the healthy and the older ones, you know, okay. I would say, like, if it was me, I've had a pretty interesting life, and not as much as some, more than others, but
I'd like to see that one.
Anyway,
is there going to be a movie?
I can promise you there won't.
It's a pretty colorful life. He's had
some people might still be alive, right? It's like the JFK thing. It ain't coming out for 40 years. But you know, I thought, well, if I died, yeah, okay, that's kind of sad, but yeah, no problem. But if my kid died, that to me would be a real tragedy.
Right.
You know, he's got his whole life ahead of him, all the kid thing to do, and, you know, hopefully one day he gets grandkids like I have grandkids. But we don't treat that way with fish.
No. It's kind of backwards.
For some reason or other, and I don't know why, I think we should be taking the old and the weak, not the young and the healthy.
Absolutely. Especially the young and healthy that, in a lot of instances, haven't even had a chance to breed.
Yeah, they haven't even spawned yet. I mean, 39
sexually mature
has spawned, oh my gosh, 6, 8, 10 times or more. You know, yeah. Done pretty much what they need to get done. Now, do you think I'm, well, I know you think I'm crazy. We heard that in the hallway. Did you say Fisher Frick was crazy? It was like, short list, people pass crazy or it is. All right. But outside of that, on this particular issue, does that, RJ, does that sound like reasonable or unreasonable?
No, I think it is reasonable. I'm not sure, not being a biologist, what happens as a fish ages versus what happens when a mammal ages. You know, does the fish stay healthy and they keep growing until something eats them? Do they grow old and die? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I can tell you back in the day, we would find a lot of the bigger snook, you know, well over 40, that the eggs look nasty. They're supposed to be orange, yellowish orange and that, you know, and they would have a kind of a funky green look to them. They just, they wouldn't be healthy, viable eggs, you know. Just from looking at them, my estimate. But if someone didn't grow up and wasn't here in Florida during that time, they would have no way of knowing that a lot of those bigger, older fish, the eggs just didn't look good. And to me, that's one of the things that always stuck in my mind, because when we were flaying snook back then, because we always ate the big ones, was I don't think they do any better than mammals, because they, with mammals, more likely to pass on genetic defects.
I think you're probably right about that. You would get a lack of genetic diversity because the younger ones aren't breeding, and they're all genetically different, you know, because there's all these different combinations of male and female coming together to create snook, new snook. And you're right, the older ones are going to start, as their DNA starts to break down, they're going to start passing on those defects.
Yeah, more genetic defects the older any creature gets. Humans included, by the way, that's where the study started. But one of the cool things about snook, going back into the fishing aspect of snook, not the opinionated aspects of your snook, they'll eat stuff off the bottom reasonably well. They're not big bottom feeders, but they'll pick up stuff off the bottom. But they like feeding right in front of them up to the top. And when you look at the mouth of a snook, and with any fish, for me to get an idea of what do I want to use for bait, I look at where the mouth is, how the mouth opens up. With a redfish, it's all down on the bottom. They can feed good down, and they feed okay straight ahead. But with a snook, they can feed okay down, they feed very well straight ahead, and they do exceptionally good up,
yeah,
feeding towards the surface. They'll come up and hit top waters.
Yeah.
And I would say probably one of the most effective is a Zaraspook.
Oh, by far.
Now, the only problem with Zaraspooks are for big snook and using a full-size snook is they glue the head portion to the tail portion. It's done in like three pieces, the head cap and two sides for the body. But sometimes that head pops off.
It's a good fish, though. Then it makes for a great story.
Yeah, it's a great fish, great story, but sometimes the head pops off on it. Yeah. Now, that never happens with the Skitterwalk, the Rapala Skitterwalk. It is a sort of copy of the Zaraspook, but you work it the same way.
Right, but that one's a solid body, right?
And solid body,
it's
yeah.
It's a through wire also?
I'm not sure if it is, but it probably is. But I know it's a solid body. I use them when I fish for black-tip sharks in top waters. Which we'll get into as the sharks get a little thicker. But now, the mirror lure top dog and top pup, those are another kind of semi-clones of a Zaraspook. Zaraspook was the first one, so everybody brings out stuff like it.
They copy each other?
Oh, no. Can you imagine rattle traps? The very first one was called the Ratlin Spot. It was from Cotton Cordell. And he didn't feel there was any way to patent it, so rattle trap changed it a bit, but became a mega seller, mega deal, all off of Cotton Cordell's, and that was actually his name, Cotton Cordell.
Right.
His original design. But getting back into the Zaraspook stuff. So you've got the Mirror Lure Top Dog Top Pup, you've got the Skitterwalk, and a whole bunch of other ones. But now Rapala came out with the Skitter V.
Which I haven't thrown yet.
I will say one thing for it. It's pretty much the easiest of all of them to walk the dog with. Because when you're walking the dog on a topwater lure, you're keeping the rod going in a steady side-to-side action with the tip going about 6 to 10 inches, and you keep going back and forth like if you were patting your head, and the whole time you're reeling. And what that does is create slack and then snap the lure. And as you snap the line going to the lure, it throws the front of the lure from the right side to the left side. Then the slack created as the rod goes forward, and then you pop it back, and it's snapped from the right to the left side. And you work it by slapping the front of the lure right to left by creating slack and snapping it. Kind of like rubbing your head and patting, rubbing your belly and patting your head. It's the exact same action. And so you've got that boom, 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 back side to side. Some people slow it down and get kind of an S pattern, a serpentine on the water. But with the snook, I'm kind of a slash, slash, side to side, stop.
Right.
Side to side, side to side, side to side, stop. I think that stopping really gets their attention almost more than anything.
I think it's the most underutilized action in any lure. I mean, people just never realize that stop could actually be an action to instigate a bite.
It's as big a motion as go is, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, stop, go, everybody, you know, that's just the way life works. Especially if a bait's being chased. It'll go crazy, bump, bump, back, you know, splash, 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 and then it stops to see if something's still chasing it or if it's running in the right direction.
Or ran out of breath.
Or ran out of breath. Now, Mark Nichols, Jim from Rapala is going to be there. I forget the guy from Zara Spook who's going to be at the tent sale. But Jim from Rapala is going to be there. Eric Botnick, the owner of Mirror Lure, is going to be there. So you can ask him about the top pups and the brand new lure that's coming out. You're going to get to buy it first time at the tent sale. Brand new Mirror Lure, brand new colors. The DOA Mark Nichols brought out, it's called the PT7. And it is kind of, it's a walk the dog top water, but rigged with a weedless worm hook, and it's a semi-soft bait. It's soft plastic, but you work it just the same way you would work a Zara Spook or a Top Pup or a Skitter Walk or any of those. I kind of like it. It's a little hard to actually get to walk the dog because it's shorter. So when it's shorter, it's a little harder to get to walk the dog. It takes a little more practice with it. I would start with a Skitter V.
Is it also because it sinks a little bit more?
A little bit, but not a lot. You know, I put my glass on to read the back of the package here. PT7's aerodynamic body casts like a bullet and skips into tight places. It's 5/8 of an ounce, so you can really get a good cast out of it. The soft plastic minesweeper detonates explosion strikes. Okay, Mark Nichols from DOA will be at the tent sale. And if you spent 2 minutes talking to Mark, it would be hard. I think it's hard for you as it would be for me not to buy DOA lures. He's pretty awesome. I was just wondering if it defined PT. I know it means poodle something, but it actually has a an actual name, and I don't remember what it is, but does look like something a poodle would leave on the yard. But anyway, a lot of fun to work. The thing I like best about this PT, for its top waters, I can throw it right under the mangroves.
You can throw it into the mangroves.
You can throw it into the mangroves, yeah, because it doesn't have a treble hook. It's got one weedless worm hook on it. It's rigged weedless. So unless you wrap a branch with the line, you're not going to get it hung up.
Right, because that's where I'd be casting most of the time with that.
Trying for squirrel fish up there?
Yeah. I'd definitely be squirrel fishing with that on a regular basis. But a lot of guys have been using that. You know, all these lures so far that you've mentioned are really phenomenal crossover lures because, I mean, it's not just for snook, but, I mean, the Zara Spook was designed for bass fishing.
Right. They're, you know, at heart, they're all bass lures.
And that PT, a lot of guys have been using them to cast into that water lettuce and hyacinth and that little duckweed and just bouncing it across the top of that, which you could do the same thing up underneath some mangroves.
Yeah, and I keep forgetting the freshwater aspect of that DOA.
Oh, yeah.
because what's the one from Owner? Zip and Ziggy.
Zip and Ziggy.
I got to admit that Zip and Ziggy, it's the Owner's clone of the Zara Spook, but that's got an awesome action. I don't do as well with it in saltwater as I thought I would.
I don't really personally, but a lot of guys do.
I mean, for bass fishing, it's pretty much my first choice, if not second choice, for freshwater, topwater. But, you know, Jitterbug, you know, Zip and Ziggy, two of my favorite topwaters for freshwater. But I can't get a fish to hit a Jitterbug in saltwater. Hula poppers, no problem. Every other topwater lure I can get. And I got customers and guys I talk to that catch a lot of snook on Jitterbugs. Just not me. They don't like it.
I've caught one on it, but I've never caught numbers on it.
And the only thing I've ever caught on a Jitterbug in saltwater was a mullet. And that he bit the hook. I have a picture proof of it. The lower lip has the treble hook coming out from the inside of the mouth out, and the upper lip has the treble hook from the inside of the mouth out. He had to go over that treble hook to bite it. It wasn't, you know, maybe he was upset with it, but whatever it did, that's the only thing I've ever caught in saltwater was a mullet who actually bit a Jitterbug.
Which is one of the hardest fish ever to really catch on anything.
Exactly. On a lure. When do you ever catch a mullet on a lure? So,
not unless it's got a cast net attached to it.
Yeah. If tie the lure to a cast net, that'll make it work good. All right. Good places for snook fishing right now, Bull and Turtle Bay. When the weather gets like this, first thing in the morning, you want to be fishing anything that faced east where the sun is going to be up first. You don't want to fish the shadows for them right now. The water temperature is pretty much in that perfect zone, but it's starting to drop past 60 in the mornings. So really, snook get a lot more active once that water's over 70 degrees. By the middle of the afternoon, or late morning, early afternoon, as that sun's straight up, that's a great time to start snook fishing. Classic snook lures, Green Ghost, Bomber Long A, 15 size redhead, white body, the AXS 104, and Rattle Traps, another classic snook lure that people forget.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good one. But what about the plain old simple, talking about crossover lures from earlier, like a Fluke?
All right. Do we define Fluke as a newer snook lure or an old snook lure? Where do we draw the line on that one? Because when I first started learning about snook fishing back in like 1980, it was a Green Ghost, a Red Tail Hawk, and a Bomber, red and white Bomber.
No, you're forgetting one.
What?
The Salty Dog.
Oh, the Salty Dog Shrimp. Yep.
Not a lot, not around anymore, but...
Yeah, they don't make them anymore, but the Salty Dog Shrimp.
I would say that the Fluke would have to be more of a modern or newer type lure for them.
Old to a young person, new to an old person.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a Bomber, the 15 size is kind of the in-between. It's not the little one, it's not the big one. When I was first snook fishing, we never threw these smaller plugs. But the size limit, you were actually looking to catch high 30s, low 40-inch snook. You know, you're looking for a snook around 40 inches. So we always threw the 16, the bigger version. Now, I'm not a fan of the one with three treble hooks. I usually, if I use that lure just for its size, I would take the center treble hook off. Nowadays, I would leave the front one on, pinch the barbs down flat, remove the middle one, and put a single hook off the back. Now, you're different. When you use those big Bombers, you get rid of all the treble hooks.
Yeah. Yeah, I just go to a single assist hook on the back, which is, the assist hook is like it's the hooks that they recommend for vertical jigs, like butterfly jigs and stuff like that.
So it's a hook with that little kind of string leader on it and a loop. And now, do you put that loop, like, to the split ring?
Yeah, I attach it right to the split ring.
Okay. But removing all the treble hooks in that Bomber doesn't mess it up.
No. Not too much at all. You can't reel it really fast. It blows out faster where it wants to come up and start riding right on the surface. So if you got real strong current or you're trying to troll it, it's no good anymore. But for a nice, slow, moderate retrieve, it works out really, really well.
Oh, something I'm so good at with my patience level, that slow, moderate retrieve. Give me more. Okay. Laughing Bucktail, white... a laughing head with white bucktail and a green feather. And that was, it's a jig. And you got a jig head that has an open mouth on it, usually painted red, little red dot where the eye is, white, all, you know, a white jig head with a red mouth, open, kind of like it's laughing. I guess that's why they call it a laughing head. And then you have white bucktail and one green feather in it. That's called a green ghost. Now, it comes in a lot of different names and flare hair and all kinds of other stuff. But that was one of the first jigs I ever, it's literally the first jig I ever caught a snook on. And I've caught so many other species of fish on it. Something about the bucktail does what no other material on the planet will do. And it's literally deer hair. And they put it in a wad, wrap it around the jig head. And this one has the green feather tied in. But when bucktail slows down, when you're pulling it through the water fast, it kind of goes real condensed, almost looks like a squid. But when it stops or you pause it, it flares right back out. And it becomes very big and flared up, like a fish excited or, you know, bait excited. And then as it moves again, it narrows up. So you get this narrowing of the hair and then this big poof, kind of like my hair is today. Yes, I know I'm looking funny lately, but
yesterday it was rougher.
Yeah, I know. I kind of look like that guy from Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I had a couple people tell me
now,
that.
Now, if I had one place to go or one lure to pick from out of all these four snook, no matter where I was fishing, whether it was the upper Myakka River or all the way down by Boca Grande and the passes, my number one lure choice would be that bucktail.
Okay.
Just because of the versatility of it.
Right. But now, there's so many snook around the bridges right now. The Placida Trestle, the bridge there at Placida, Englewood on Beach Road, the ones north of there, south of there, Cape Coral Bridge. I mean, every bridge, 41, I-75, they've all got snook around them. And I find my best bridge lure is usually a rattle trap. It's a half ounce to three quarter ounce rattle trap. And my favorite color is not the white and green or the white and silver and black or the silver and blue, but that orange kind of crawdad color. I don't know why, but I've done so much better on that since finding it accidentally. I didn't have the silver and black one that I normally use or the pinfish looking one that's my second favorite. And I said, I need a rattle trap. So I just grabbed it because it was the only one really left that looked close. And man, that thing works good. It's orange. It's got some brown and black in it. And around these bridges in that tannic water, now I've never tried it out on the intercoastal, like at the Tom Adams Bridge or Placida. But if I was fishing the Cape Coral Bridge, 41 Gilcrest Bridges in Punta Gorda, up on here in Northport where the Myakka River goes under 41, any of those bridges, I want that orange rattle trap. I just do so well with it. Cast it out. When it hits the water, most of those bridges are going to have about 8 feet of water under them. And I'm going to let it fall for about 4 or 5 seconds. See the splash, 1,001, 1,002, I'll get to four, and I start reeling it in. And I just do a nice, slow, steady retrieve. If I'd make four casts and don't hit anything, I'll start jigging it. Lifting the rod tip up, letting it fall, give it a little bit more action. But most times, slow, steady with the rattle trap.
Right. And that's one of the other things that makes it so versatile is that you can change your action and get different depths in the water. But like you said, for that vertical jigging aspect of it, especially when you got these cold nights like we've had the last couple of nights, those fish are pretty lethargic. So being able to slow that thing down is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And you've also had phenomenal success trolling this thing. So whether you're shore fishing or boat fishing, that lure is perfectly ideal for every situation.
Yeah, I love it trolling the snook. I go along by the bumpers and troll. If you ever run the shop, stop and ask me about it. You know, it's a passion of mine. I'll be happy to explain it to you. Here's one fact. Usually if I'm going to go snook fishing with a topwater, I'm going to stop between 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'm really not going to take it out of the box until 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. It'll work all night and mornings and evenings. But usually during the middle of the day, the snook, it's really a tough, tough bite to hit them on a topwater.
Yeah.
You know, one fish that hits during the middle of the day, and I think it's because, well, two reasons. they key in on sound a lot. And it's actually one of the problems because they'll hear the top water go off and strike where they heard it rather than where the lure actually is. They'll hit behind it, they'll hit around it, but they don't actually hit it. But they love hitting top waters. And it's sea trout. If you're going out after sea trout, and you can use top waters almost all day, I think the reason is they're in such shallow water, that 2, 3, 4 feet of water, that even though it's a top water lure sitting on the surface, they're still looking in front of them for it.
Yeah.
They're not looking up for it, like the way a largemouth bass or a snook laying down deep would be. You know, a snook pretty much going to be up against the mangroves, but he's going to be very close to the bottom. Anything on the surface, he's got to look up for. The trout go along through that middle of the water, very, very close to the surface a lot of times, 4 to 6 inches under the water. I think they're looking ahead of them, and that's why they still hit the top waters in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the only other animal that seems to hit it worse or about the same would be a redfish.
Well, redfish, they love striking at them. They love hitting topwaters. They just can't get them, and they got to get their whole body up out of the water and do a circle because their mouth is so far down on their head.
Right.
They can't just, like, lunge to the surface for it. The reason they boil on the topwaters is because they're literally trying to swim with only their belly in the water.
Right.
To get up flat enough to be able to hit that topwater. They really want it, but they're just lousy at it. They're really not good topwater hitters at all.
No, not at all. But I think, you know, in the same aspect, I think you're right with maybe the vision aspect of a trout and then the mouth aspect of a redfish. I'm not sure which one's tougher at getting to hook up on a topwater.
Oh, the redfish, definitely. I catch a lot of trout on the topwater. The thing you have to steel yourself, too, is you work at stop. Then you see it hit, you just give it a real quick little splash and let it sit again, and then they'll hit it. And the hard thing to do is not pull it out of their mouth.
That's the hardest part for me on any fish.
You know, I have a saying that I do, hit freeze. So if I get a hit, lock up, don't move a muscle. Instantly stop. It's like that game of musical chairs. When the music stops, you got to be sitting down.
Yeah, stop.
So you're working a topwater, you see a strike, stop whatever you're doing, just freeze, wait for the rod to bend, then set up on them, and you'll get your fish. But if you see a strike and set the hook, you pulled it right out of their mouth. There's no way they're going to connect to it.
Which I do that a lot more often.
Yeah, well, that's very, very common. Let's see. That is unless you're me and you're just really, really good at it.
Yeah. I am not.
Oh, well, I was expecting a little splashback from that, but, you know, I guess everybody agrees with me. So I'm going to take the win and just move on. All right. Trout down in Pine Island, the outside Pine Island Sound. You've got some around Boquilla. The amount of bait there is bringing in some trout. Bull and Turtle Bay have a lot of trout, but they've got more ladyfish. There's some bluefish mixed in, a couple of jacks here and there. But the jacks are slowing down with this colder water. I didn't realize jacks were as temperature sensitive as what they're appearing to be this year.
Yeah, I think you're accurate with that. The
of course I am. What were you thinking? Reconsider that phrase. Okay, never mind.
It slowed the bait down and it slowed all of the fish down. But jacks, yeah, they definitely seem to get affected by an extreme drop in temperature. A mild one is no big deal, but literally what, in 10 days we lost 11, 12 degrees in the Gulf?
Yeah, it's been dropping a degree a day.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty astronomical.
For some reason, that slowed down the jack bite, and you want to do WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. You can go to kdwradio.com and click the Listen Now button to listen to the show, but you're already listening to the show, but you can do it on the website, too. Or click over to the donation button, because this is Real Community Radio. It's a nonprofit. They rely on donations to produce the show. And Robert's got to be worth, what, a quarter, 50 cents you can donate? You know, I got to be worth a nickel or two. You know, well, maybe not that much, but, you know, give a couple of bucks for Robert. All right, anyway, WKD Radio, 97.5, broadcasting out of Northport, Florida to pretty much almost everywhere. I get it real nice in the house now, up in Harbor Heights. I can just do it at home.
Nice.
And at the bait shop down there, Fish and Frank's, comes in real good. So perfect. I've actually started listening more. And one thing I can tell you, if you're listening to this show, check in with this station like every half hour, hour. I guarantee you'll find something you like because you never know what's coming up next. People talk about they do a varied program. Take a back seat. WKDW rocks of all. If you like something, listen to it. You'll find it. It's all here. All right. Back to Sheephead is another big one. Sea trout down south in the harbor more. Not a lot up here. A few up around the 41 bridge. Yeah. But Micah River's got a couple, but really the Peace Micah don't really have much for trout in. But what about Sheephead? I thought this was going to be done. Did the cold bring them back?
Yeah, the cold definitely lit them back up. You know, they're starting to catch them, you know, not any numbers at El Joe Beam, but they're a little bit better quality fish, but it still is so sporadic that one day they're good and the next day nothing. But the vast majority of them seem to be still south along the intercoastal. Still the Alligator Creek Reef is doing really well this past week from what I've heard from several individuals. And then quite a few individuals are getting them confused with the spade fish that they're catching out there off the out of Alligator Creek Reef, too.
No, spade fish are awesome, but you got to peel the shrimp. Piece of meat, little number six hook, just let it drift out free line, and you can put them about 4 feet below a bobber, and you'll hit pretty good. But I usually just free line a little piece of peeled shrimp meat, and those spade fish are awesome.
Yeah, and people don't realize how good eating they are, too, you know. There's a lot of places that actually target them as a food fish. Here, they catch them, and they just are real apprehensive about them, so... You know, if your sheep's head isn't cooperating or your trout on some of these different spots that you're fishing at and you pick up a spade fish, which is usually going to be more open water pilings or...
Yeah, around the pilings at either end of the reef, usually you see a lot of spade fish.
Try one out. You'd be pleasantly surprised with how
they look like an angel fish, boys and girls. If, you know, you have an aquarium angel fish, that's the closest thing to what a spade fish will look like. But good eating fish, a lot of fun to catch. If you got a group of kids... you're going to head out by the reef and anchor off or whatever end the tide's coming from. But you want an extra bag of frozen shrimp with you because I dice up the shrimp, including the head, and I'll scatter little pieces on the water. Just half a shrimp at a time, scatter some out, wait a minute or two, throw a little bit more. I can literally start chumming those to the boat. And a regular chum bag doesn't work as well on spade fish. Right. I literally... dice up shrimp myself and pitch them out little tiny mashed up pieces. How are the spade or the sheephead doing on the reefs like Mary's, Power Poles, Helen's, any of those?
Pretty good. I mean, I haven't gotten a lot of reports this week just because of the wind factor, but when it switched over to the east, northeast, those real near shore reefs like Novak and Helen's and Mary's that are all within like 4 miles of the shore tend to get blocked, you know, the wind gets blocked off by the land. So they've had a few people going out and hitting on those and doing pretty well.
All right. Now, one of the things that has been coming up a lot, sharks. Hearing lots of stories about sharks.
Right.
Now, what would you say is the most prevalent shark in the harbor right now?
Bonnethead.
Bonnethead's?
Bonnethead's the most realistic shark around.
When you're catching them, it's a bonnet. But if you have friends or relatives from up north, they're shovel nose. Or hammerhead, because they are part of the hammerhead family.
Right.
Is that Carl?
Yeah.
He's
out with the marine biologist today catching Goliath grouper.
Right. He's doing his bit for the state because the state is trying to do more research on Goliath grouper jewfish, and Carl's taking out the scientists trying to catch more of them.
Yeah.
It's nice of him to donate the time, the gas, and all that to that research project.
Absolutely.
What would you say the second most prevalent shark in the harbor is right now?
Honestly, I'd probably have to go with maybe a sandbar shark if you're looking for a larger shark.
All right, where do you find the sandbars this time of year?
This time of year, the sandbars will move in from offshore. They're traditionally a very deeper water species, like that 60 feet of water or more pelagic type. But for some reason, in the springtime, they actually come right into the harbor. You are fishing for one fish a day, though. You're going to fish all day, but they're usually in that 6 to 8 foot range. And anywhere you go, your shot is as good as anybody else's. You know, Barry, one of our customers, he catches them regularly off his dock. He caught a stud the other night, a big female, like, I'd have to guess her, like, 8 foot.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, most people, the average size sandbar in the harbor is like 5.5 to 6.5 foot. 6.5 foot, you're starting to get in a quality, very quality sandbar. But this one was a solid 8 footer. It was a very
large. Does he live on the harbor in a canal, or what is it?
He lives right on the harbor.
Right
next to a canal. He's like almost like right on a corner.
Right. And well, that makes sense because they come to the mouths of the canals to feed. A lot of sharks venture in very short distance in. Now, I don't know, but is a sandbar one that's always got to swim, or can it lay on the bottom like a bull shark?
No, it's always got to swim.
So it's not going to go up very far in a canal. It might get it, you know, 100 yards in, but it's not going to like those tight quarters.
Yeah.
Usually it'll stay within the realm of the opening where the seawall bends in. They'll make a little venture in, but I'd say more than 100 feet would be pretty rare.
Yeah. You know, the other option is you also got maybe an occasional black tip. Like, if you can find some of the schools of glass minnows out there and you maybe see some Spanish mackerel free jumping around them or ladyfish, it would be worth putting a bait down there because you might have a black tip or a sandbar move in on those.
All right. With the bonnet sharks, the sandbars, and the black tips, favorite bait for bonnet shark?
Shrimp.
And I'm using them with a 2-aught, 3-aught hook. Live shrimp, and I'm just using 30-pound fluorocarbon for leader.
Right, that's all I'm going to use.
All right, I'm not using a steel leader on them.
No.
But if you're going to go to the sandbar, what's bait and what's leader?
Mullet, and I'm going to use, I like single-strand piano wire, just like a number 6-aught or a 7-aught hook. Well, probably like a 7-aught or an 8-aught hook with a mullet on it.
Yeah, bonita, ladyfish, mullet.
Yeah, any big kind chunk of cutfish, yeah.
Okay. Drop back to the black tips. My Same favorite thing. Bait's half a thread fin, sardine, but I use the AFW bleeding hook leaders.
Right.
And they're only about an 18-inch leader. I don't need any more than that. I use a light spinning rod, a 6 to 12-pound class, for anything up to about 4 foot. And
which makes it a lot more fun.
They're a lot of fun that way. If you use a big, heavy rod, you just water ski them back to the boat. Might be fun for the shark, doing a little water skiing coming back. But for me, I don't really enjoy the whole thing that way. Now, have you ever been shark fishing, RJ?
I have.
You have? What kind of shark fishing is your thing?
Well, I haven't done much here in Florida, but up in New England, blue shark was a big deal. You know, big ocean-going blue shark and the white tips. And they're great. Great animals to catch, and you know they're pretty good size. You know, three to 8 feet.
Tasty or no?
Oh yeah, I mean a blue shark is a great shark to eat.
Yeah, my favorite's the black tip, Atlantic sharp nose, stuff like that. Those are the ones I like to eat. I keep the smaller ones and fillet them up. I think they're awesome. You don't eat shark, do you, Robert?
Not a big fan of them.
Okay.
I mean they're good, but I don't have a favorite one. I'm not a connoisseur of them.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like me. I don't keep black or bonnet sharks because I don't like the flavor.
Right.
But, you know, other people absolutely love them. I'm just more of a black tip guy.
I mean, and my favorite shark I've ever eaten is Mako.
Really? Mako's the number one?
That would be my number one choice if I had to eat a shark. That would be it. Not realistic, but, you know, because they're very similar in texture and flavor to a swordfish.
Gotcha. You know, I've had swordfish several times. Mostly smoked, a couple times not, and I'm not that crazy about it. I'd rather have snook or, you know, some of our other regular fish than swordfish. Never did that much for me.
It doesn't do that much for me either, but it is good depending on who cooks it, because, I mean, I've had it a couple different places, and it's nothing to write home about for sure, but a couple places I've had
make blackfin tuna to me is just wonderful, and, you know, right. I did swordfish compared to blackfin tuna.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly,
I think people just think it's good.
Yeah, it's the prestige of it.
No, sometimes they go by the price, too. It must be good because it's $25 for the plate, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll get to Mako.
Plus, it looks better on the plate than a grunt.
Yes.
You know, but I'd rather eat grunt than any of them.
Yeah, the little grunts and snappers and stuff out there. And what's funny is I'm not a – most fish I prefer the bigger ones. Black drum, I like them big. Snook, the bigger they are, the better they taste. But Mangrove snapper, the bigger they are, the less I want any part of it. If they're like 12 inches, awesome. When they get much over that, I let them go. I don't know why. It's just, but this is flavors we're talking about here.
Sure.
That's like if you like strawberry. Do you like peanut butter? Or can you? Some people can't stand the taste of peanut butter. Other people love it. These are flavor issues we're talking about, not edibility issues. I don't really know of a shark that isn't edible.
No.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. Now, any lures? I throw topwaters for sharks. And I've caught a couple on that rattle trap, the floating rattle trap. But other than that, I don't know if I've actually caught any sharks on a lure. Or have you heard about anybody catching sharks on lures?
Well, when you've got them really chummed up hard, you can get them to do that when they're behind the boat, swimming in the chum slick, looking for that food item. Absolutely, they will hit artificials. But to actually go out and pitch it just kind of blindly, hoping you're going to find one in that area, not as common as you would think. I mean, the only two I've ever hooked on artificials were complete dumb luck while fishing for other animals. One was a bonnet head in the Keys. That was the very first fish I ever caught.
What was the lure?
Actually a Bagley jumping minnow or jumping mullet.
Oh,
a
topwater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've caught them on topwaters.
At that point,
I think they're fun.
At that point, it was kind of sinking though, because I'd caught a lot of cudas on it.
Oh, okay. So slow sinking topwater.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other one was a black tip right there off of Cape Hayes, and that one was caught on, honestly, another topwater. I'm thinking that one was either the mirror lure or a spook, because those are usually the only two that I used to throw then.
Yeah. To me, the floating rattle traps right along the sandbar, black tips and bonnet on that floating Rapala. I'm sorry, rattle trap. That floating Rapala, and you just kind of give it a pop, let it float back up, and jerk it and let it float back up. The shrimp-colored one and the white and green. I've caught them on both those two colors. I actually caught sharks throwing artificials for sharks, but not often, but I've done it a couple times. You ever heard of anybody catching sharks on artificials, RJ?
No, it doesn't work all that well. I think, you know, sharks hunt partly by smell, in addition to, you know, they're picking up those electric vibrations that a fish makes when it swims.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're just not getting that out of an artificial.
And I
think when they do get them on artificial, it's like you say, there's a chum slick going on, so the scents are there, you know, and now they're just they're picking up something. And topwater vibration would be the most.
Or a fish jumping across the surface. Could be a flying fish. It could be anything escaping somebody.
Yeah.
So I think the only lure that you would consistently do that with. Now, I was targeting them with the rattle trap, the floating rattle trap. But I use that Strike King coffee scent spray because I don't like my boat smelling like shrimp and fish and mullet and dead crabs and licorice and all that other stuff. So I use the coffee spray. I think the biggest thing for me is getting my smell off of it because
all the scent really
I don't have a big, strong feminine side, you know. I mean, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you want to back up a little. You know?
Yeah, the fish is thinking, oh, that lure is rotten.
Yeah,
whatever that little fish is up there, he rotten. I ain't eating that.
Well, and also, men of top-of-the-line predators, males of the human species has been killing everything on the planet for hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah.
So they know once they smell human male, back off because it's the top predator coming through. Pretty much everything. If you're walking through the woods, they smell you coming. They don't want any part of it. Same thing in the water. The only thing in the water you have to be careful of is sharks because males, a lot of testosterone, that's threatening to a shark. It's aggressive. And sharks will attack a man when they would never look at a woman or a kid.
Right.
They would go after a guy first. And not because of food, as just because we're a threat. They smell us as a threat, not as a food.
Yeah, they want to be the dominant one.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I get that. You know, I own the bait shop. You know, so I get to be, well, I don't know if I'm quite at the hammerhead level, but I'm above a bull shark.
I'm going to give you the hammerhead level.
Almost?
No, I'm going to give it to you.
Okay, you're going to give me the hammerhead level. Okay.
Absolutely.
For those of you who don't understand what we're talking about, You'll be out in Boca Grande Pass, and you'll have 30 bull sharks. You know, you get a tarpon on, the sharks attack the tarpon. You got 30 bull sharks attacking this tarpon. And some of them are 8-9 foot bull sharks, big, big, heavy sharks, 400 pounds. And a 10-foot hammerhead comes through. Not that much bigger, decidingly skinnier.
Oh, a lot smaller proportionately.
Yeah, I mean, much skinnier, much more slender fish. But that hammerhead comes through, and it's the parting of the Red Sea. The bull sharks back off. They keep, I would say, what, about 30, 40 feet distance from a hammerhead?
Oh, yeah.
And you can literally, when he swims in, if you've ever seen like a school of bait fish with his fish swimming through it where the bait all backs off, hammerheads, when they swim through, everybody moves aside.
Yeah, they definitely command a whole lot of respect from everybody else out there. They are the top of the pecking order.
You ever going to see that, RJ?
I saw that diving once. You know, we were watching a bunch of black tips around the reef, and all of a sudden they were gone. Where'd they go? And then a few minutes later, this hammerhead comes through, and he wasn't much bigger than the black tips.
That's the thing I don't understand.
And that's an awe thing too. You know, we're not afraid of the black tips. We're kind of watching them going in and out of the reef. Boy, that hammerhead came through, and the first thing we wanted to do, let's get out of the water. You know, let's go the other way.
Little hairs on the back.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's something very primal about looking up and seeing a hammerhead above you.
If you want to feel what primitive people felt when they're out there, just be in the water with a hammerhead or anywhere around where there's a hammerhead, because that's a very primal fear.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's pretty cool to watch though and observe it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's awesome. All right. Getting into Spanish mackerel and the mackerels out there. Water temp in the Gulf, pretty much prime for king mackerel. 68 to 72 is what they like, and that's where we're at. Yeah. From Naples to St. Pete. Now, it's getting colder up in St. Pete. It's down in the middle 60s. So they're here. They're pushing down from up north. They're coming south. And I would say from us down to Fort Myers.
Yeah, that's where I've gotten the few most best reports have been, like, off of Fort Myers Beach at the Edison Bridge Reef for some kings in Spanish, and then basically scattered all the way up to Boca Grande, and now, 3 to 15 miles out up until this wind really started blowing.
Now, the Spanish were in Charlotte Harbor in big numbers. They were really doing good, and that water got a little too cold.
Yeah.
A couple of degrees, and they went back out in the Gulf.
Push those glass minnows out and the Spanish out. You know, you're hearing of a few stragglers here and there that are following that slow incoming tide, but not in the numbers the way they were 10 days ago.
The good news is that means they're going to be back very soon.
Yes, it is.
These mackerel have left Charlotte Harbor. They're going out into the Gulf, and they're working at Gulf going south following that warmer water. But we had one shot at them. Now, the next thing they're coming back, they're going to be coming back up over the course of the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And they're going to be moving back into the harbor. The kings are here and going to stay here for at least another week or two.
Oh, all of that, depending on the water temperature. I mean, that's the beauty of king mackerel is that, you know, they might be only here for 4 or 5 days, or they might be here for 4 or 5 weeks. As long as that water temperature is right and the food source is right, they're here.
Yeah, I write for Coastal Angler, and I wrote an article for him a while back about how to read a fishing magazine. And the biggest mistake people make is, especially if you're fishing in the Gulf, bass fishermen need to read articles from south of their location to north of their location if they're in Florida. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with a saltwater fisherman. If you're fishing along the Gulf and you want to know about what is going to happen, read the articles from 100 miles north of you and 100 miles south of you.
Yep.
What that's going to tell you is where the fish are. Then you know if it's warming up or cooling down. You can tell which direction they're going to go. If it's cooling down, the fish are going to move south. If it's warming up, the fish are going to move north. Right. And so king mackerel right now, they're from us to Fort Myers is probably the best range for them. How far off do you think you need to be? Are they, any of them going to be in like 20 or 30 feet of water?
That's where the couple reports that I've had this week have been out there in that 20 to 30 feet of water. Because that Edison Bridge Reef is like 32 feet of water. But okay. I've had people catching them off of Captiva Pass in 20 and 25 feet of water. So, you know, definitely in that 20 to 30 foot range, you're pretty much nailed right on it.
Now, is it true the smaller ones as tend to go out further and you've got bigger snook in closer, like the closer to shore, the bigger the kings?
Yeah, usually. And they're more solitary animals. They're usually swimming by themselves or in doubles versus you get into those smaller fish, let's say under 20 pounds, they're more of a schooling type fish.
You're going to look, what, more 40, 60, 80 feet of water?
No, they're still out there in that closer, but they're going to be more concentrated around the reefs and around those bait schools versus those bigger single animals. You're usually catching those by blind luck, or you're actually covering some ground by trolling larger baits. You know, a bigger blue runner, ladyfish, some of the big depth-specific lures like the Rapala stretch 25 or 30.
And we got the stretch 40s now. Yeah. We got the 40-foot divers. And
but my problem with those is that it's going to dive too deep because I'm going to want to stay up there in that 20 feet of water, 25 feet.
If you're in 20, 25 feet of water, you let that down, let it tag the bottom and reel in twice.
Right.
Put two cranks on the reel. That's going to keep it low, deep, dirty, and it should bring a lot of attention.
I would think
you
so.
You do a 40 on one side and a 30 on the other, and then put a couple of drone spoons out or some big spoons for king mackerel above those. That's, to me, that would be an awesome combination.
Absolutely.
Now, I like to flatline my spoons because I've got the big lures in the back rod holders and the two on the very back of the boat. And then forward of that, I put spoons out. But I don't like that the rods are so high. So I come from the tip of the rod down to a flat line clip off the back of the boat. It holds those spoons in the water better. And all I'm doing is putting the flat line clip to the back cleat. And then the line's clipped there. If a fish hits, it pops it out of that clip. It goes back up to the rod. But that the higher you hold your rod tip when you're reeling in, the shallower the lure runs. So if I can drop those lines from being, you figure with the gunnels, 2.5 feet off the water, and then another 7 foot for the rod, you know, that's up to like 8 feet off the water at least.
Oh, yeah.
Eight to 9 feet off the water, the tip of that rod. So if I can run that line down to the back of the boat and flatline it off the back, to me, that's the best way to run those spoons over the top of those big plugs.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Now, you could run a number one planer. But I think you're going to do better off the flat clips.
Yeah. I mean, I think the planer will pick you up a couple more incidentals of bycatch, like a Spanish mackerel or maybe a bonita or something. But I definitely would prefer to have my spoons up high on the surface, just barely skipping or just barely under the surface.
Now, with the Spanish mackerel and snook, I'm going to talk about Dexter Russell knives for just a minute. American-made blade, they've got an awesome handle that you can dip into hot water or liquid, and you hit it for just a second in cool water, squeeze it, and it literally puts your fingerprints, every scar, every wrinkle in your hand, it becomes your personal knife. It won't fit anybody else's hand. It's your knife, and it'll cut through bone and make delicate cuts. Now, keep in mind, in order for snook to be edible in order for it to be better than edible, in order for it to be wonderful, you have to cook it with even pieces of meat. So I'll lay the fillet down and then slice it like I would a loaf of bread. I'm going to make it in 3/4 inch, 1 inch pieces, just chopped up long. Just picture the fillet laying there until you get down to the thinner parts. But when the meat's an even thickness, it's wonderful all the way through. A whole snook fillet is slimy on one end and too dry on the other. It's too varied in thickness. You got to make it the same thickness. Dexter Russell, American-made fillet knives. And the other cool thing to do, when you're doing Spanish mackerel, you always have to watch for those belly bones. Make a little deeper indentation around that belly fins. The fins on the belly, that's where those little bones are. They're not randomly placed. They're literally connecting the fish to that fin off its belly. That's where you're going to get those little, get those fins out a little bit deeper than normal. You eliminate those belly bones. And this is Fish and Frank here, RJ, our producer over there, and Robert in the chair across me. Any last words, Robert?
No, come to our tent sale March 24th and meet Dexter Russell themselves.
Meet Carl from Dexter Russell, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Mark Nichols from DOA and Eric Botnick from Mirrorlures and Doug and Mary Miner from Strike King. I mean, what a lineup, what a show. That's a week from this Saturday. Bye.
Fish, fish, fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.